Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz and Leo Laporte, episode 62 for March 28th, 2009, E-Box. Floss Weekly is brought to you by the 2009 Google Summer of Code Project. Full and part-time college students get paid for writing open-source code this summer, review a list of projects, and submit an application from March 23rd to April 3rd. For more information, go to code.google.com/SOC and enter Floss Weekly on your application. It's time for Floss Weekly, the show that covers free Libra. I have to say it right now because we've got two Spaniards on the show today. Mm-hmm. Free libre. How do you say it in Spanish? Libre?
Libre. 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 Just a little bit of a roll. Libre. Not much.
Free, yes. Libre open source software. And here he is, ladies and gentlemen.
You don't roll that final R.
Software.
Come on.
Here he is, Randall Schwartz.
Hi, Leo.
Hello, Randall. How are you?
How do I follow that? I have no idea.
Randall, of course, is at Stonehenge.com. He's a programmer, a writer, an author, and an expert on all kinds of software, but a real guru for the open source community. And he's
and
really
a darn good karaoke singer.
And
don't
a darn
that.
Good singer. You're going to do your Kermit the Frog impression for
hey,
us today?
Kermit the Frog here.
Wow!
Someday we'll find it, the rainbow connection, the lovers, the dreamers, and me.
Jim Henson Lives.
Now we're going to have to pay a drop cost on that, you know?
Shh.
Okay.
This is free Libra open source music.
Shh. Okay.
FOMS. So today we're going to talk about something I know nothing about. And I'm, you know, this is going to be one of those shows where you're going to be screaming at me because I'm going to say stupid things. The program is called E-Box. Is it even a program? I don't think it's a program exactly.
No, it's actually an environment in which you're able to configure your systems. It's a little bit like Webmin or Plesk, if you're familiar with that. It's sort of a way of managing your, I think it's in this case, Ubuntu boxes, so that they have all the right services turned on and all the right, I mean, like when you're configuring mail, you have to say, here's where my mail gets sent to upstream, here's the users on my system, stuff like that. That can be done, but it's just really difficult going through all the detailed menus and everybody's written by something else, different people. So what E-Box tries to do, from what I understand, is sort of put a nice layer in front of all that, so that you even simple people like say you can configure an Ubuntu box without having to read, you know, a ton of documentation.
Well, I'm intrigued. We're going to talk to our friends from, I guess one guy's in Zaragoza, Spain.
Mm-hmm.
That is Javier Vasquez.
Mm-hmm.
And his pal, Isaac, is it Clarencia?
Clarencia, it looks like.
Yeah. Has moved to Ireland lately from Spain.
Mm-hmm. Just a few weeks ago.
We'll get them on the line via Skype in just a second. Mm-hmm. But first, I do want to mention Google.
Yes, Google.
You know, it's something that became apparent to me about half the time we'd be talking to somebody and they'd say, yeah, I started this as a Google Summer of Code project. And I started to go, wow, this is a big, big deal. 2009 Summer of Code is coming. I think it's the fifth Summer of Code. It started in 2005. Since then, the program has brought together 2,500 students. They've written millions of lines of code. On all sorts of, I think, very important open source projects. It gives student developers an opportunity to get paid to write code. And it gives open source projects a real leg up because they've got this great, talented pool of energetic young guys and gals to work on their projects courtesy of Google. I just love this idea. And so Google's asked us to let you know about it. And we want to tell you to apply. So the application date is, it's going on right now.
Mm-hmm.
It's March 23rd to April 3rd.
Mm-hmm.
So what you do, if you'd like to apply for this, you do get paid. It's a job, basically. But what a great job. What a thing to put on your resume. Yeah, I worked at the Google Summer of Code 2009. Go to the website, review the list of projects, and then submit your application, which will say what projects you'd like to be a part of. The projects are online. The mentor organizations and their ideas are online at SOC, Summer of Code, socghop.appspot.com. socghop.appspot.com. So you take a look at those mentor organizations. The ideas, about 150 ideas of those will be accepted. Actually, they already have been, I think, because March 18th, those went up. Mm-hmm. So now we know what the ideas are. So you go to the website. You have a couple of days left to review the projects. You can even converse with the mentor organizations. Their emails are there. Ask questions. Then pick some and apply to participate. Now, the application is also online, of course. Google's not one of those companies that mails you a piece of paper. It's code.google.com/SOC. Code.google.com/SOC. Do us a favor. When you fill out the application, let them know where you heard about this, of course. We want to let Google know that there are a lot of talented programmers listening. I love the Summer of Code poster and video this year. It's really cool. It's got that Summer of Love look on it.
You know? Yes,
it's very
cool,
very neat. So we invite you to check out the Google Summer of Code. Apply if you're a student. This is a great opportunity to participate. A great way to get a job, to meet people, to have Google on your resume. Again, that is code.google.com. Google's a dessert. Google is the web. code.google.com/SOC and do enter Floss Weekly on your application.
This is a great project, you know, because it's wonderful. I worked with a number of open source projects last year that were accepted as sponsor organizations, and then a number of really cool things came out of that. And since last week's show, I went off and found that it turns out the Git project that we've talked about in one of these past shows of Floss Weekly had about six or seven things that were accepted as part of the Google Summer of Code project. And the one that for me made the most difference was sort of interesting because it's something people would use every day. Git used to, when it needed to bring files together that had been changed independently by two separate groups, used to use the external RCS merge command. In other words, there was a command that would invoke by command line to say, take this file, take that file, and kind of ram it together as best you can and show me where the problems are. Well, a student in last year's Google Summer of Code project, Miklos Vajna, I'm probably mispronouncing his name, I apologize for that, rewrote that so that it was actually written in C code internal to Git, which speeds it way up. It means everybody using Git everywhere. I mean, all the people using Git for Ruby on Rails projects and the thousands of projects that we've talked about that are all using Git now gets to benefit from this one student's work. And it's really great that this was brought together to make this possible.
Really, really cool.
Yeah.
Well, it's neat. I'm really glad that we could work with them on this and help support this project.
Absolutely.
It really does support open source. And, you know, I love open source, and I'm here. I'm glad we're doing the show. I'm glad you're here to kind of spread the word. And we love getting people on. Well, we got some kids on who actually started their project when they were in school.
Absolutely.
In fact, as far as I can tell, looking at them right now, they could still be in school. They're pretty young.
Indeed. Let's
say hi to Javi and Isaac.
Hello, guys.
Hi, guys.
So, Isaac, you used to be in Spain, but now you're in Ireland.
Yeah, I just moved here like three weeks ago, just in time for St. Patrick's.
How fun! Is it for school or for work?
No, I'm just working there. Move here. I just work. Well, I work for Evox, but we can work from wherever we want in the world, so I just decided to come here.
That's kind of handy. You could just go wherever you want.
Yeah, that's really great.
And Javi, you're in Zaragoza.
Yeah, that's it. In sunny Spain.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh, that must be quite nice this time of year.
Yeah, today it's been great. It's been like 25 degrees. Great.
Celsius. Like 90,
right?
Yeah, that's really hot. Yeah, that's
very cool.
That's
very hot, actually. Yes.
So we talked a little bit about Ebox, but why don't you start, Javier? What is Ebox?
Well, Ebox is a platform to manage Unix or Linux services, okay? Well, what the user sees is a web interface. What we try to provide under the hood is we like to think that we use a lot of integration, okay? We deal with services as if they have to cooperate with each other, not like if they are separated. So, because we think that in some Linux distributions, such as Debian or Ubuntu, packages work very nicely out of the box, but there is a gap when it comes to integration. Maybe a little example. For example, if you have a firewall, a web proxy, and a content filter on the same machine, it's very likely that you want the three services to work together. So that's what we try to provide. We try to automatize and do those tasks in an automatic way. Okay, not we don't deal with services as they were just one separate thing.
So this helps you to administer a box that might have a complex array of services like mail and web and a firewall and all that at the same time on one box then.
Exactly. For example, if you have a mail system and you have a mail filter system, it's mm-hmm. obvious that if you have that on the same machine, they are going to work together. Okay. Or the same thing with open VPN and the firewall. Well, and a lot of services.
So this is the kind of thing that a system administrator would use. Now, are we looking at like just like a home user managing their own box, or are we scaling all the way up to enterprise level with a product like Ebox?
Yeah, you can scale to the enterprise level. We started to target at small and medium business. That's more or less the kind of user we are expecting.
So this would be like a small office, home office setup, and you're trying to simplify it, because I know one of the things that just gets crazy about administering, especially a Linux or Unix system, is just the number of things you have to know to be able to do everything and the number of ways you can mess up a configuration file. So you're hiding a lot of that and simplifying a lot of that, correct?
Exactly. And we are providing just a unified interface to manage all those things. Yeah, exactly.
I've seen in commercial enterprises, you know, HP has something view. I can't remember the name of it. Similar
open
idea.
Open view.
Componentized, all of that. Is this kind of an open view, open source open view?
Kind of. The thing, I'm not very familiar with open view, but I've just read a little bit.
Well, neither am I, so we're even. but I guess, yeah. You know, in business, this is the kind of thing you need is software that will allow you to manage these systems over the network, right? And give me an idea of the kinds of things people are doing with Ebox.
Well, a lot of things. I'm gonna tell you some of the stuff that Ebox ships right now. You have a lot of networking stuff like firewall, routing, advanced routing. Like you can have several DSL connections, and you can do balanced traffic between your connection or traffic shaping. I don't know, and you have also things to work for with groupware. I mean, like PDC support, eGroupware, where you can share calendars, an address book, an email server. Well, mostly the usual things that you would need in your company to set up your network infrastructure.
Does this simplify at all the problem of having multiple machines all doing similar things, forming sort of a pool of services? Or am I actually, with Ebox, still looking at each machine individually, configuring it individually?
Well, it depends. It depends. If your services are using LDAP, mm-hmm. It's very likely that you can do this you can simplify the manage of the services with Ebox. If you are not using LDAP, it's more tricky to make operate several machines. I mean, I'm talking about machines in the same network. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, for example, if I have a number of server machines, their outbound email server will all have to be sort of the my one corporate gateway, my one front-facing gateway. So the rest of the machines would all have to have the same setting for smart host. Is there anything in Ebox that keeps me from having to go to each of those other machines and saying the smart host is over here?
No, we don't provide that right now.
Okay, so you're still really looking at each machine individually being configured to some degree.
Yeah, that's
but you're,
it.
But you're really more service by service, right? So.
Yeah. It's what I said before. If you are dealing with LDAP, for example, you have more chances to be able to do that.
Right.
For example, if you have one machine where you have your users with your Windows with your PDC account in Samba, okay, and in another machine you have a web proxy, and you want the and you want your users to authenticate against your web against the same LDAP. So you can have the LDAP in just one machine, and your web proxy, which is running Ebox 2, can authenticate your users against the LDAP server, which is in another Ebox.
Oh, that's cool.
I don't know if you get the idea.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, makes sense.
So I'm looking at the website. You do NTP, you do Jabber, OpenVPN. I mean, all of the services that you'd typically want to be running on a network. You mentioned Mail, Randall, web proxies. You do DNS certificate manager. You've got built in there. I mean, this is pretty complete here. So, Isaac, tell us a little bit about what your job is with Ebox.
Well, I just started developing Ebox when we started it, like 4 years ago, I think. And in the beginning, we were just working in the core of Ebox. And then I had to work in some other things, and I left the project for some years. And now I'm just back from, I think, like 3 months or 4 months. And I'm working on improving the core of Ebox. I'm not developing like modules, but just working on trying to make it easier to develop new modules and that kind of things.
Yeah, we had, you probably remember it, Randall, Larry Augustin on the show talking about enterprise software being the next big growth area for open source, because it's easy to, you know, you don't have to get a requisition to try it. You just download it and you install it. You can do it on one box in a corner, and it slowly seeps through the enterprise. Have you found that, guys, to be the way that Ebox ends up getting adopted in enterprises?
Yeah, well, right now the main, like, we're targeting, like, people who they want to integrate Ebox in, like, they maybe have, like, customers and that they want to their they want something to install their like corporate server to administrate these services. So
they don't have anything yet, and they're looking for a solution now.
Yeah, they are mainly usually having like this Windows for a small business and some things like that. But they would just love something like that is more flexible or cheaper or something like that. So they just look into Ebox for that, I think.
And one of the things I've heard is that you can replace a Samba server, an SMB server for Windows, with a Linux box, and nobody will know the difference, except that it stays up more longer.
Yeah, it's more reliable.
Yeah, faster,
works better. All those things, those minor details. Yeah.
So Ebox would help somebody in that situation because they probably have lots of practice and history with how to manage a Windows server system. But, you know, here's this foreign Linux box. How do I get this up and running? How do I, you know, do it in a weekend while my boss is away? You know, that kind of thing. And this would sort of give them the sort of training wheels to get, like, up and running quickly. Is that sort of the goal of this?
Yeah, exactly. That's the goal. Like, it's not that easy, like, configure a Samba server just to make it look like it's like everything works that was working with the Windows server. Mm-hmm. And in Ebox, as soon as you install it, it kind of works out of the box. So mm-hmm. it's and most people are using the Samba module for this.
Right. But as training wheels, does it limit you at some point? I mean, is there some point where I'm now familiar enough with Ubuntu system administration where I'd want to just discard Ebox and go directly to the provided menus?
Well, I think Ebox is completely modular, so every service that we support, you just can decide which one do you want to Ebox to manage, wow. And you can just install the required services. Mm-hmm. And even if you install them, you can just enable them. And if you don't enable one model, then it will leave you alone, and it will allow the rest of the system to deal with this service.
Okay, so does it give you access to most of the service, though? I mean, are you hiding so much away from somebody, like all the tricky configuration details, that you wouldn't be able to use this for advanced configuration?
Yeah, one of the main points of Ebox is we don't want to, like, just because our service offers you like a hundred of features, we don't want that. We just want to think, okay, so we want to provide like maybe voice IP services. Mm. So we just don't look at Asterisk, for example, and think, okay, we want every feature in the interface. No, it's like, so what would like a small business want when it comes to voice IP? And we just provide a small and easy to use interface for that.
Okay, so you start by providing sort of the core of the services. Now, I've got to put in a pitch again here for open source. One of the nice things is that if you decided that these 10 out of the 100 features are useful and you're hiding the other 90 from me, if I decide that an 11th service actually, or 11th selection on that is actually useful, I can just go in and change and add the configuration that adds the 11th without having to leave Ebox yet. Is that correct?
Right. Yeah, well, we have these hooks for configuration. So Ebox writes its configuration files for the services, and then you get this chance to run like a command of yours to maybe modify the configuration or something like that. So mm-hmm. you can actually like customize the service configuration before the daemon is actually run. So that way you can just make any change that you want to the configuration file, but still keep Ebox. And then it's free software, so you can just, if it's a feature that really like users like having and you provide a patch, we will be really happy to like accept it and
I would use this instead of, let's say, you said Samba or SMTP. I would use this as my mail server, if I'm using it as a mail server.
Right.
And I'm looking, I mean, the mail server, it's fairly full featured. You got Spam Assassin, you've got Clam AV, it supports Postfix, so people are...
Yeah.
You're rewriting all of these two routines, though. I mean, this is a lot of work. Do you incorporate, when you, for instance, incorporate Postfix, you incorporate it into, you don't rewrite it, you just incorporate it in, or for...
No, we just incorporate it.
Yeah.
It sounds like all you're doing, though, is providing the configuration level of it. I mean, these are still the standard tools. You're just
still
putting
running underneath
a friendly layer. Yeah, under. Is this a lot like Webmin, then? I've heard of Webmin. Is this close?
Yeah, well, the main difference is that with Webmin, you just it's like an easier way to write the configuration files, while here we want to provide another level of abstraction, so you don't really know even, you don't have to know which is at, like, for example, the firewall administration for Webmin is basically you have to write IP tables rules, and you have to know how kind of IP tables work. Mm-hmm. Well, here you just see like a language that any person that knows about networks can understand. Like, what you do on any redirect from one port to another port, do you want to block this or block that? You have to actually know that there are like input chains and output chains and pre-routing and post-routing. So it provides another level. And then it's what my friend Javi said, is about integration. Like mm-hmm. with Webmin, if you set up like a mail server and a web proxy, like, and you want transparent web proxy, you still have to set up the firewall by yourself, and you have to know that you have to make a redirect from this port to another port so the proxy web works transparently. And with Ebox, if you have the firewall module installed, then in the proxy module, you just have a checkbox, and you say, okay, I want the proxy to be transparent. And then automatically it taps the redirects, so automatically the web proxy is working as a transparent web proxy, for example.
So maybe for a simpler example, if I have to turn on Apache on my box, I would also, if I had a firewall that was very restrictive, I'd have to then remember to go back over to the firewall thing and said, by the way, let port 8080 in, or port 80 in, or whatever it takes to do that. Whereas with Ebox, once I use the EBOX module for Apache to say, please turn on port or please turn on Apache, it goes over to the configuration for the firewall and says, I also need port 80 open now.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, very good. So you're integrating all the services and making them all coordinate with each other. That's really cool. So what's my interface doing? Am I talking to the to an Apache instance? Is this all done in the web? Am I doing it in a browser?
Yeah, everything's in a web.
Okay, so you've got Apache.
Everything's done with a browser.
And it's implemented in, I bet, since I sell this spec already, it's implemented in Perl. Why Perl?
Yeah, well, back then we have mainly worked with C and C++. Doing like desktop programs and command line programs, and Perl was the only language that it was we could use to write a web application, and that we have some experience with. So it was kind of a personal preference, and that was it. Probably today we would choose maybe Python or something like that.
No,
but,
you're hurting Randall's feelings now. Don't? He likes Perl.
I just stick to Perl.
There you go. Yeah, okay. Javi says I'm staying with Perl.
You had me at Perl. You don't need to go any further. You can stop now.
We are happy with Perl so far.
Good. All right. And so somebody who wants to add modules is probably going to have to know Perl, or can you write modules in other languages?
Well, right now you have to write them in Perl, but you don't have to write that much code. It's like mainly you are working with, we have this model system, this framework. It's kind of similar to like something that, like Ruby on Rails or something like that. So you just declare the model, like for example, for the firewall, you say that you need a table with rules, and the rules have like a source IP and a destination IP, and then you decide if you have a Boolean to decide whether if you want to block it or allow it, and then it automatically generates an HTML table and with AJAX and all that. So you don't have to write that much Perl.
Okay, that's very cool. Very cool.
What does the installation look like? Do I run it on just one box, or am I running on a variety of boxes? How does that work?
Well, that's as you wish. Like, if you are just running like three modules or something like that, like firewall, proxy, and something else, then you can just have them in one box. But if you want to like have maybe the file sharing in Samba, you want to have it in another box, you can just spray it. The point is that it's good because you can have different machines with it, but still use the same technology for your file sharing system and your mail server and. So that's
it. And they all talk to one another. So does it look like it's one e-box, even though it's on different systems?
No. It's still you will have to manage like different e-boxes.
I see. So you log into the different e-boxes for different to manage different capabilities. It says that also there's a web service interface. How is that different from the web browser interface?
Well, it's something that you can use to like develop programs that remotely talk to EBOX. Like every method, the API of every model is exported via SOAP, and you can just make remote calls to like the functions.
Cool. Oh, that's really
like
cool.
Open this port, add this user. You can change anything that you can change from the web browser. You can also change it from a script.
And that's what you would do in Perl.
Yeah, that would be in Perl.
Yeah.
Well, actually, it's a SOAP, so in theory you could use like
any SOAP. Okay.
Yeah.
So you could use Python if you really, really
you
wanted to.
Yeah, yes. You could use Python to do the scripts.
Or Lisp. You could use Lisp.
Use Lisp. Anything with a SOAP library, you're good. All right.
Fortran. You could probably use Fortran.
Probably. I don't know. Does Fortran have SOAP libraries? I don't know.
Now what would you use it for? Is that if you had, like, say, some sort of management machine that saw that a system was failing somehow and could bring up a second system in place of it? You could use this remote call to sort of bring the second service up?
We're thinking about that. For the next release, or maybe in 6 months or something like that, we want EBOX to be installed by default with a virtual machine. So we can do this kind of stuff, but right now we can't do it. It's like EBOX will be installed by default in this virtual machine, and we'll have some like really lightweight service out of the virtual machine. So if it like there's any kind of problem, you could just like log in and reboot it or something. And for example, if you're going to do an update and you don't want to risk losing it, it will automatically make a snapshot of the machine, and then if it works, you can just keep the new one, and otherwise you can just roll back to the old one. So that will be soon.
Javi, how did this get started? Was this something that you needed for yourself or a client?
Oh, well,
no.
Sorry.
go.
I want to give Javi a chance to say something here.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, Evox is closely related to the company we created back in 2004.
That's Warp.
It's called Warp Networks.
Yeah.
And, well, we were a bunch of computer science students who wanted to work with free software as much as we could and stuff like this. Mm. Okay. And, well, we were hired by a friend company whose main business was system administration, and they wanted to create some kind of appliance, you know? So they gave us a list of requirements, and we started with that. So, well, and at the time, we thought that we would complete all the planned features in a matter of months, okay?
Of course, because you were just computer scientist students. You didn't know.
Yeah. Developers, optimistic, naive,
right.
You know.
Right. I could do that in 2 months. Yeah.
They do that in the afternoon. It'll take an afternoon, yes.
Or the best. Oh, that's trivial.
Yes, right.
Yeah. But the funny thing is, after 4 years of development, there are some things on that list that have not been implemented yet. So
4 years.
Those were a little less trivial, I think, yes.
Yeah.
If you'd used Python instead of Perl, it would have been done sooner.
Oh, now. But you couldn't do it in Squeak, so forget it. Randall, we can't figure out what kind of programmer Randall is. You know, he keeps changing languages on us.
It's okay. I'm a crazy programmer.
He's a crazy programmer.
Yes.
So let's talk about development. You're developing in Perl. What's your development environment look like?
Well, we mainly use I always use VI to develop.
Mm-hmm.
I have this. I also use SethSH as myself, and I have several macros to help me and these things. And then we run virtual machines to develop with KVM. And I always have run a couple of them.
Do you have a versioning system? What do you use for versioning?
We use Subversion right now, mm-hmm. but we are seriously thinking about moving to Git.
Git, yay.
That's what we hear everybody say. We're using Subversion right now, but we're seriously thinking about moving to Git. That's like the line.
It's going to be something.
I think everybody means it.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of moving to Git. I don't even write software, and I'm thinking of moving to Git.
But it's trendy. It's trendy.
It's trendy. It's with it. It's hip. Yeah.
Yes.
If they call it Gitter, I'm there. You know, I'll move right there.
and some sort. You have some sort of bug tracking tool?
Yeah, we used to use Track for that. Okay. Track is it includes the bug tracking system and a wiki and some other things, and mm-hmm. it's written in Python, but now we have moved to a similar thing which is written in Ruby, I think, mm-hmm. which is called Redmine.
Yeah.
And it's quite, I mean, we have moved to Redmine because it's in Ruby and our systems guy likes Ruby better than Python, and because it includes a forum. And we had a forum mm-hmm. separate from in the past, and we would like to have everything integrated. So that's it.
Actually, let's get back to something we skipped over a minute ago. So you guys have a company now that both releasing this as open source software, so I can download it and start using it right away. But you also have some kind of business model on top of that. Why don't you talk about the business model?
Yeah, well, I guess Javi can do that.
Yeah, well... Well, we both are technical guys, so we have the guys who think the business model, but I think I can give you some ideas.
Sure.
Well, the thing is, we've been 3 years developing Evox during 3 years, and mm-hmm. Before we decided to create a company around Evox, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, we decided to create the company because... For example, we saw people out there who were making money with our product, and we decided, okay, so let's try to make money with doing the stuff we like to do and doing free software, and let's do it with Evox. Well, the thing is, right now we are working a lot with companies in our local region, but as we are a small company, okay? We want to be able to install or provide a consultancy for a company, for a small company in, I don't know, in the USA or something like that. So our business model is based on working with partners, with local mm-hmm. partners. And those are the ones who provide the support and the consultancy. And we would provide the third level support and things like that.
So let's say Stonehenge, for example, my company, wanted to be in the business of providing small office, home office, Linux machines in my area. I would contract with you to sort of give me training and provide, be my backup while I'm actually out there in the field sort of doing this for the people that would be my clients.
Exactly that.
Okay, cool. That's very cool because I know that, you know, I'm sure there are a lot of people that have some knowledge of Linux. They've played around with it for a few years and they want to sort of bring this into small office, home office situations, but they sort of, they're still a little bit, you know, I don't know if I know every combination of things I want to set up on this box and that sort of thing. So it sounds like this would be an ideal solution for that.
Yeah, that's what we're looking for.
Okay, very cool.
Actually, we have already, like, there are some people in the US, for example, installing Evox, like, in offices and connecting them, between them with OpenVPN, and they are already asking us for to be partners, and they are quite, we haven't yet defined exactly what a partnership is, but we are almost there, and we are already having lots of people asking us for partnership, so it's looking good.
It's really good when the people are demanding that they have a way of paying you long yeah. ahead of you having a product.
Even before we're ready for it. That's great. Yeah.
The right kind of business.
It was fun because it was like, Isaac, like a month ago or something like that, that a guy gave us money PayPal, and he said, this money is for the developers. Only for the developers, not for the management team. So please, developers, have some beers with us.
Wow, that's very good. That's very good. So how many people are working on the sort of the core team? How big is the core team?
It's, right now, we are 6 developers.
Okay.
We have almost doubled the team in a matter of 2 months. And in the past, we were like 3-4 developers, something like that. Now it's cool. Now it's cool because we are 6 people, and now we can go to the details. You know, in the past it was like it would be nice to have this or that, but we had to focus on the features that everybody needed. And now we already have most of those features, and we can focus on the details and provide a better experience for the users.
How do you prioritize the current outstanding bugs and new feature requests? Is there like a IRC chat amongst you, or do you like have mailing lists amongst you, or are you all in the same? Well, you can't all be in the same room now that you're in Ireland and Spain. So a little tough, huh?
Yeah. Within the development team, we use voice over IP and IRC all the time. And when it comes to new features, we like to get a lot of feedback from our users because mm-hmm. at the end of the day, they are the ones who are going to use this. And it's not like we know everything. We know what they need. It's the other way around. They know what they need. So more or less, we are driven by what the community wants or needs. We still stick to some kind of roadmap, but we accept a lot of recommendation for people and from our users.
And how do you get that feedback? Do you have like user forums or user mailing lists?
Yeah, user forum. They open tickets on our track side, or okay. they stop by our IRC channel to say, "Hey, it would be nice if you have this because blah blah blah," things like that.
That's always handy. Yes, definitely when you have that kind of feedback. And I understand this is based on Ubuntu. Why Ubuntu?
Well, the thing is, we started with Debian. In 2004, okay. Debian Shards at the time. And we used Debian Shards for almost 3 years or something like that. And the next Debian release was out, that was DebianNet. So our software was getting old, aging a real bit. So we had to switch to DebianNet. But the thing is, in 2007 or something like that, some Ubuntu guys started to work on making Evox work on Ubuntu. So we decided that we should take advantage of that, switching to Ubuntu, basically.
Now, do you find Ubuntu to be harder to do what you want because more of it is configured for you, or is it actually easier? I mean, how did it change your development effort?
Well, it didn't change that much.
Okay.
It didn't change that much. The thing is, it's pretty. I mean, the services that we use underneath are very similar to the versions in Debian. And mm-hmm. well, some things have improved because the Ubuntu guys invited us like 2 years ago to the Ubuntu Developer Summit. So mm-hmm. we had the chance to talk to them, and they told us what they would like to have. They told us what kind of improvements they were going to make to the Ubuntu server. So it has improved.
Is there any thought by the Ubuntu people of just absorbing Evox and bringing it into as the core way of administering the system?
Mm, that's an interesting idea.
there have been some talks about that. Well, the thing is, when they started to work with Evox, they were looking some kind of solution for small and medium business servers. So they decided to pick Evox, and we were very very happy for that. And well, at the moment we keep developing it by us. We have a very good relation with them, and that's all.
I got a text, Randall, from Bear, our sysadmin,
yeah.
who says, because we run something called Plesk, which is just a nightmare on top of Ubuntu for our web server and all the services on that. He says we could be running Evox instead.
Maybe. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. Do you have people, Isaac, who replace Plesk with Evox? Do you know if that's a common usage?
Yeah, I have heard about some of them doing it. Some users replacing Plesk.
Yeah, because you pay for Plesk. It's written in Perl.
Yeah,
it's just a bunch of Perl scripts doing the same thing.
Yeah, it depends on how do you use it, because I think it's also used like to manage like hosting services.
Yeah,
Evox is not good for that.
Right.
But
normally it is, because there's, you know, it's somebody who's got a bunch of customers managing all of them, but it's really just me managing our server. So it's kind of we don't use any of those features at all. The commercial features.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then it should be okay.
I use it to create, you know, email redirects and manage my email servers. I use it to, for simple things. I probably could do a lot better with Evox. Yeah.
Give it a try.
I will.
Once again, Leo downloading something by the end of the show.
Yeah, Bear, let's make it so. Let's do it.
So let's just replace all of twit.tv.
Yeah, why not? See what happens. Well, we are. You know, it's funny because we are setting up a new server. We're migrating. Our old server is kind of, you know, 3 or 4 years old. I think we've burned it out, and we're moving over to a new i7-based server. And we're going to put Ubuntu on it, which is great. We were Red Hat Enterprise. Uh-huh.
And
I was specking out for Plesk, but maybe we should just use Evox instead. It sounds like it might be a better solution.
Instead of zeros and ones, you only have zeros and point sevens now. It's so burned out.
You know, you laugh, you mock me, but it's true. It's burned out. Let me tell you, we wore the thing out. You know what was the final straw was the second RAID 5 controller failure in 6 months.
Ugh,
I thought, you know, I think this server is kind of old now.
Now, you've done this stuff in Perl. What do you must have? Are you just saying print, print, print in the Perl, or do you have some sort of templating system?
Print, print, print.
Well, some people do it. I ask. That's what I'm asking for.
No,
you've heard of the thing called Ajax. There's this really neat new thing now. It's called the internet.
But the templating side, what do you guys use for templating? Is it Mason? Are you using Mason? Or?
Yeah. So it's Mason.
Very good.
And we don't only use it for the HTML pages. We use it also to create the configuration files. So, for example,
quite cool. That's very cool use for that. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's great. It works great.
Yeah, before I switched to Template Toolkit, I was doing a lot of work with Mason, so I played a lot with the Mason guys.
And does it use a database backend for these, or is it their flat text files? How does that work?
It actually uses, like, we have a configuration tree, which is written in XML, and for that we use gconf, the GNOME configuration backend, which sounds kind of weird, but I think we are the only ones who are using it besides GNOME. And so, yeah, but the thing is that it offers a really easy to use API, like just say like set a string or set int, and the place do like a path to the configuration key.
That's great.
So it was really easy to use, yeah, and we use that. But now we are thinking about switching to LDAP, mainly because that way we could just, for example, share the configuration between several hosts. So we have it partially implemented already, but as it's quite a major change, we are waiting for the next major revision, like 2.0, which might be, I don't know, maybe in a year from now, something like that.
Mm-hmm. What kind of QA do you use? Do you have some sort of QA framework for this stuff?
Oh, yeah. Well, actually, it was one of the worst things about Evox was releasing, making a new release. Because we had to test, like, it was fun developing it, but when it came to release, we had to make sure that everything worked, and we had to test, like, lots of features in lots of modules for several distributions. So we spent, like, days doing that. For example, we have some scenarios, like, for the OpenVPN module, we had to set up 6 machines, like two machines with Evox, another 2 routers, and then another 2 client machines, and then we have to establish the OpenVPN connection and check that you could connect from the clients. So we really needed to do something about it. So we decided that we needed to create a tool that, like, to deal with all that automatically. So we created a tool it's also open source software. It's called ANSTE, which stands for Advanced Network Service Testing Environment. And you just write a scenario file with XML, and there you define the machines you want to create, like with the number of network interfaces, the hard disk, memory, the network topology, like this interface is connected to this one. I want this IP address in this interface. And then you... scripts are automatically run to set up these machines. And well, in the beginning we were thinking about just running scripts to set up everything and see if things work, but then we thought that we also wanted to check if the web interface worked. So we are using this program called Selenium, which allows
Selenium.
You to... allows you to test web interfaces, so we have and do stuff automatically with them. So we use Selenium to programmatically configure Evox through the web interface, and then once everything is set, we just run some automatic tests, and if it's successful, then great. Otherwise, a video is recorded of the desktop, so you can actually see what happened, and that way we can just, like, before doing a release, we just run the whole test suite, and then if there's any problem, we just immediately know about it.
So how long does it take to run the entire test suite now on a new release?
Well,
a few hours.
Yeah,
a few hours.
That's not bad.
As we didn't have money to create a big QA department, we decided to replace it for a script in Perl. Well, for a tool in Perl.
Yes, there we go.
Yeah.
So we are actually writing a chapter of a book for O'Reilly about this tool.
Oh, cool.
Cool. And what was the name of that again?
ANSTE, yeah. And the book is called Beautiful Testing, and it's supposed to come out, I don't know, in some months.
Very neat.
But the tool is named ANSTE, O-N-S-E-T, is that what you said?
A-N-S-T-E.
A-N-S-T-E, ANSTE. Okay, all right. Very cool.
Yeah.
Very cool. Looking forward to that. That sounds really
cool.
Maybe
I could replace the entire Twit Cottage with ANSTE.
Only Ozzy.
You know, Ozzy has to stay. Advanced Network Service Testing Environment. That's cool.
Yes.
In fact, they're so proud of you, they have you right on the front page there. It says that Ebok uses it. That's good.
Well, kind of helps that he created it.
Oh, although it's from Warp Networks. Doi.
Yeah.
Doi. Okay, never mind. I'm going to go back to sleep now. It's okay.
That'd be like having Leo on the front page of the Twit Network.
Shocking.
Jesus.
I don't know. How could that happen? Just be a shock. All right, forget I said anything. I'm just going to go back to sleep now. I know.
So it sounds like you've got a lot of work into it. You've got a lot of work ahead of you. What's probably, I mean, looking forward, what's your focus going to be like for the next 6 months?
Javi is the technical director, so...
Javi, it's your turn.
Okay.
What's the focus,
dude? During the 6 months, we have a lot of stuff already in our repository, mm-hmm. But we are going to support voice over IP using Asterisk, and in a very cool way, just out of the box. Mm. Like something like you will add a user... And your user will automatically have an extension assigned to him. So with his user and password, he will be able to log into the Asterisk server, and he will be able, if you allow him to, he will be able to make calls, external calls, and stuff like that. We are adding a lot of improvements to the user interface too. And we would like to focus on improving the working with the LDAP. The thing we told before about making different D-boxes working with LDAP together. I think that's a very important point to make that work very 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 well.
And are you looking for resources for that? Are you looking for people to help you write that programming? Volunteers to contribute some of their time and energy?
Yeah, sure. They are very, very welcome.
And so they would find you at the website, and they would download the current release and then talk to you guys about submitting patches and getting access to the committing if necessary, that sort of thing, right?
Yeah. That's it.
And these are people that probably primarily would need to know Perl and XML and some of the configuration things in the back and know how to read bug reports then.
Yeah. Well, the thing is basically Perl and that's it, yeah.
Okay. Well, how about documentation translation? Do you need people for that?
Yeah. Also, and we have a bunch of volunteers doing the translation for the e-box itself too. And yeah, and the documentation translators for the documentation are very welcome too. We have now some people who are doing proofreading for us. And yeah,
your English is awfully good, both of you.
Yeah.
I'm actually kind of impressed that you have time to do all of this. And is this common? Is everybody in Zaragoza speak great English?
not really.
Or is it part of being an open source programmer or a computer scientist that you just need to know English? Or is it just chance that you two guys sound better than I do?
No, it's quite related. I actually learned English because I am a Debian developer, and I had to go to some conferences and stuff, and I really wanted to be able to like talk to people. And
that's great. That's really great. Yeah. How about you, Javi? How come your English is so good?
Well. The thing is, I was an exchange student in London for 6 months.
Okay.
No, right. But wait. I was in London, but I learned in London one of our dialects here in Spain, which is Catalan.
You learned Catalan in London. Okay, great. That's useful. Yeah. What, were you with a Catalonian family? How did that happen?
Because, I was an exchange student there, and we were with... there were a lot of Spaniards too. So
I see.
I was surrounded by Catalan people. There,
everybody was from Catalonia. That's neat. Yeah. Well, anyway, you guys obviously you've got the English translation down. So if anybody wants to translate into Chinese, they can volunteer for that.
Yeah.
I want to point out, by the way, that Isaac also has a side gig. He's developing a basketball game called In Your Face.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
This is just for fun, you do this?
Yeah, it's actually for my degree, but I haven't worked on it for a while, but I'm really looking forward to work on it again. I hope that someone listens to this and maybe helps, because I will really benefit from help there.
Well, as you say, you're not a great artist.
No, I'm not, definitely.
Actually, you say I am the worst artist ever. So,
probably.
So you'd like some help with the 3D graphics?
Yeah, that would be awesome.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's great.
Wow,
isn't that cool? I just love it. Right. So you haven't got the. So you both are still in school, or are you? Just you, Isaac.
I actually finished, like, in school you have to do this, in Spain you have to do this, all these subjects, and then you have to hand in a final project.
And this is what's left.
Yeah, but because I finished my 4 years of school, 5 years of school, and then I had to do this, but I started, like, working, and we created a company, and I just got involved in so many things that I didn't feel like I had my own company, so it wasn't a big deal just having the degree or not having it. So I'm kind of working on it, but not. Yeah. I'm not too worried about
that. That's what happened to Bill Gates, too. Don't worry about it. It'll be fine. Yeah. He came out all right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you get help from the government of Aragon? I see that you have that logo on your page. What's the story there?
Javi, do you know about that?
Not really.
Okay, never mind. Did I mention anything? I was looking at the Anstey page, and at the bottom, it says Subvenciona Gobierno de Aragon. You see, my Spanish is really bad.
They give us some money, yeah.
Yeah, that's great.
That's always handy.
Yeah, that's really great. Well, it's wonderful to talk to you both. It sounds like you've got a great project, and obviously, do you know how many installations you have?
It's difficult to know, you know, because sometimes
anybody
you can try to use the number of users you have in your forum or your mailing list or something like that, but... You know, so for example, you have people who joins your forum and says, "Hey, I have a problem with Evox," and he tells you, "But I have installed 10 machines,"
right,
you know,
and
they join the forum only when they have a problem.
Right.
So
right.
it's a bit difficult to know. I would say, I don't know, 10,000, 15,000, something like that.
That's great.
I don't know.
Cool. That must make you feel
very
pretty
cool.
Good. That's wonderful.
Very nice. It's very difficult to know. It's very difficult to know.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Well, it's so great to talk to you both. We thank you so much, Isaac and Javi, for joining us. Isaac is in Ireland, where he's enjoying the beautiful Irish weather.
Yeah. It's quite good today, actually.
Oh, good. All right.
It was sunny the whole day.
Yeah. And the results of St. Patrick's, yes.
And,
exactly.
And the, I think it's a 3-day holiday. I think it's still going on, as a matter of fact, right now.
Wow. Yeah, until today.
Until today, yeah. And Javi, thank you for joining us from Zaragoza, Spain. It's great to talk to you both. Ebox is at ebox-platform.com. Thanks, guys.
Okay, thank you, guys.
Take care.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Good luck with the basketball game. Fun for you developers. That's so cute. You know what I really like is the fact that they actually wrote tools in order to make this work.
Right.
And they wrote their own tools, and now they're distributing tools. So this is a whole, you know, it's a whole nother. I say that too much. I'm told
somebody,
there's no
yes.
word nother. Somebody sent me an email. There is no word nother, Leo. It is a whole...
Another, but that doesn't make any sense either.
It's a bunch of other stuff. Nother's right. A good word. If there's no word nother, we need it. I'd like to do an open source development of the word nother.
I think you can deploy whatever word you want.
Can I register that on SourceForge and we'll have a track and I'll use Git.
Yes, it'll be a single file with a single,
single
word
file
in
with
it.
The word "nother" in it. But this Anstey, for instance, the testing environment, I think it's just great that. But I think you see this all the time, don't you? In open source, that people.
Well, this is true. It's true because you know what you have to have is you have to have not only the thing you're working on, but the thing that you're working on it with. You know, this is why things like Linux and GNU Emacs and GCC, all the infrastructure stuff of open source is very important.
Right.
And why having all that also be open source means that we get additional leverage because we can take that to new platforms. We can take that development environment with us to new systems and new architectures that we wouldn't have had otherwise, or use pieces of it with other architectures, like porting all the stuff to work under Windows with Cygwin, you know, the way that we can take all tools kits with us to work underneath a foreign operating system like that. So it's really, really nice that these guys not only have come up with this really nice configuration tool that makes it possible for a small office, home office equipment to use Linux in a nice, convenient way, but also have created this meta structure that also is very cool to use. So this is I love it when people do this. It's great.
It is really neat. Well, and they're so young and so enthusiastic and energetic. It's great. It's just really good to see.
Yes, yes. I'm sorry that we timed this show to be right during St. Patrick's Day, though, for the at least the taping of it for somebody
fine.
In Ireland.
Isaac did fine.
He sounded pretty
completely awake, and maybe he's going out now. Though it is fairly late, I think, in Ireland. So.
I have a first.
Yes.
I have an actual hard copy letter. I have a
letters. I'm going to have to get a letters jingle now for the show.
I know. It's been pretty rare, but and it's since I have never done a letter before. This is a couple of paragraphs, but since I've never done a letter before, I want to read the whole thing. So yes. I didn't want to edit it all. So Randall, first I want to thank you all for the work you do with Floss Weekly. Aw, blush. As a programmer and web application developer, open source software is very important to me. It's nice to hear open and technical conversations about topics that are important. Now here's where you and I both come in here. During the recent Floss Weekly about ZFS, you talked about getting a round to it in some parts of the country. Remember that? The round to it conversation?
Yes.
We're talking about that,
it's
right?
It's a whole other conversation.
Right. Okay, so he says, in my not working life, I build and program robots.
Oh.
This last fall, I built a demonstration robot for the ChaiBots, Chicago Area Robots Group, for an exhibit we were holding at the iHobby Expo. Well, I should say this is from Mike Davey, by the way. This is from Mike Davey. Okay, so this last fall, the robot I built used inkjet technology to print on wooden nickels. The nickels had a number of different designs, but the one of them was a round tuet, or was that an around tuet? I wish you and Leo would enjoy a couple of the tuets. I've sent a couple of them.
He sent you tuets?
Yes, here they are. I don't know if you can see them.
They're
the video,
round.
Round, and on one side they say Nickel-O-Matic, and on the other side they say the Chicago Area Robotics Group, iHobby Expo, ChaiBots.
Isn't that cute?
I have a stack now. I have no excuses. I now have a stack of round tuets. Oh, there's a video too. There's a YouTube link. I'll put it in the show notes for people going to the website. But I don't want to say it out loud because it would take too long.
Bring the site down the minute you do. So.
I'm sure. Well, yeah. YouTube. Do you think we'll bring YouTube down? Come on. But the robot's called Nickel-O-Matic. It's been a big hit with kids and adults alike. My goal is to come up with something that maximizes the entertainment and produced a product for people to take. If you want to see a video of it, go to this YouTube site. There's also information about it in development at the ChaiBots site. So ChaiBots.org.
And is that ChaiBots? Is that it?
Perfect. Yeah, ChaiBots.
So if I search for ChaiBots on YouTube, I'll probably find it. Huh?
You'll probably find a video there. Look for the Toit, and it's spelled T-O-I-T. So look for the round Toit bot. I'm sure we'll probably find it. Or the Nickel-O-Matic. One of those will probably find it.
That's
and again,
funny.
Thanks for your work on Floss Weekly. Enjoy your custom around Toits from Mike Davey at Envision Inc. Really thank him for that. So we actually have a real letter. I love it.
We get real letters.
Real actual items from guests.
We get letters.
I made it to the big time. I've actually got stuff in my mailbox. This is cool.
So you're back from one cruise, and is the next cruise China, or do you have another one?
Next cruise is China. Nothing else in between. Now, this last cruise I was just on, we did Evolution. It was the Scientific American third cruise that we did. Lots of good stuff already in the feed. As you're listening to this show, it's either the second or third part of History of Life on Earth by Dr. Stephen Freeland. And Stephen Freeland, real energetic guy. I do have some, they would be blackmail pictures on my Flickr account of him wearing a colorful wig. So, but he said it was perfectly okay. So if you go through all my Flickr pictures at flickr.com/Randall-Schwartz, you'll actually see pictures of Stephen Freeland wearing this very colorful wig on one of the nights. And that's another long story. I won't get into that. But anyway, History of Life on Earth, very good. He goes all the way from 4.5 billion years ago until now. Describing the process that evolution went through that period. Very entertaining, very good guest. I've got 3 or 4 programs from him throughout the week of the cruise, so keep listening in the feed for that. And that's at podcast.insightcruises.com. Go check that out. Yeah, there's definitely some good stuff there. Also, I got to put a plug in, twitter.com/Merlin. Follow me on Twitter. As we're taping this show,
M-E-R-L-Y-N.
Yes. As we're taping this show, those of you that are on the live feed, which, by the way, we should mention, Leo, that's Wednesday afternoon. Do you want to tell that?
Yeah, we do this live, and we do all of our shows live now on live.twit.tv, soon to be on 3 different channels, so there'll be ways you can get it a variety of ways. We'll let you know. But if you just go to live.twit.tv, that's the best place to go. And we do this show 2 p.m. Pacific, that's 5 p.m. Eastern, or when I get around to it,
on. I'll ship you a few.
Every Wednesday. So it's fun to watch live. You can chat in the chat rooms. You can give us feedback. You can yell at us. You can mock us. Again, that's 5 p.m. Eastern every Wednesday, except when Randall's on a cruise or at a conference, which yes. lately is we've been pretty good. We haven't missed
been
a whole lot.
Pretty good so far, right. Yeah. And so why I'm saying this is that as we're taping this live, I am going into surgery tomorrow morning to have the plate removed from my hand. And I will be Twittering as I'm getting to the doctor's at 6 a.m.
Oh,
I can't believe they got it that early. I should be out of there by about 10:30 a.m. That's West Coast time. So watch for the Twitters on that. I think the first Twitter I'm going to do after I come out is not dead.
Okay, I'll look for that. If you're under anesthesia, it'll probably come out.
It'll be all caps. NOT DED.
Are you going to save it ahead of time? You know, just so you can just press send.
Just press the button. Right? I'll have it so if I release the button, it automatically sends dead. How's that? No,
you know, it won't be the first Twitter from surgery. There, a couple of doctors actually got in trouble Twittering from a cert from the operating.
Yes, it's good. So please follow me on twitter.com/Merlyn. By the way,
Merlyn. I'm going to change CG here so that it says
I'm like under 6,000. I'm like in the 5,500th Twitter guy now. So that's not bad. I'm getting up there. Nowhere near your like number four, but still.
No, I'm not number four. Are you kidding? No, not even close. I'm barely in the top 100 these days.
Oh my God!
It's impossible to stay on top anymore.
Yeah,
the youngsters are here and they.
But I'm gaining like 15 a day. Thank you guys. It's really fun. It's fun to watch the numbers go up, and it's also fun to watch. I am replying to everybody who mentions Floss Weekly on Twitter. So if you want me to follow you, please just mention Floss Weekly on Twitter, and I will follow you.
Follow me. Follow you. There you go.
It's all good.
I wanted to ask you one other thing about the Sun. The possible acquisition, and maybe by the time you hear this, it'll be happening, of Sun by IBM. That's been floating around all day today as we record that IBM might offer, and not very much, I think $7 billion for Sun. It seems like it would be, given IBM's commitment to open source along with Sun's, it seems like it would be a good thing. Sun's been struggling a little bit. Well, you know, we love Open Solaris. We love ZFS.
And in fact, I'm actually moving Stonehenge.com to Open Solaris in the Amazon EC2 cloud. I'm getting help from Aaron to do that. Yeah.
I saw your Twitter about that. So the question is, does EC2 support that natively or do you have to install it yourself?
Yes. No, they have an AMI for it already.
Wow.
So I just have to drop my content. From what I understand, I just drop my content in the middle of an EC2 instance that's already pre-configured for me, and it boots ZFS.
See, I love that. That's how it should be. I mean, not only you're now in the cloud, but you're extra safe because of ZFS. Does it support the things like back in time and stuff like that?
It's Open Solaris. So back in time will be just, whether I enable or disable, it'll be automatically in there. Plus, one of the things that EC2 changed recently, or Amazon Web Services changed recently, is they now have the extensible or the eternal block service, whatever it's called, EBS. Mm-hmm. So I can actually have like a 100 gig disk mounted that stays up between instance invocations. So that was my worry before, because before, if your instance went down and came back up, you lost all your local disk. You had to put it all on S3 somehow. So now EBS basically means you just mount a disk, and you can have that disk be ZFS as well. So I'm going to have an EBS disk that's ZFS mounted into my EC2 instance running. So that'll be really slick and easy to do. And it'll actually be cheaper than my current hosting service. That's the amazing thing. So that'll be very, very good to look at. So I'm moving to the cloud. I'm moving to the cloud on that. Shall we talk about upcoming guests?
Yes, please. What you got going?
My God, I tell you, just so many cool people coming up and so many other people on the short list. We have next week the Agostino Russo from Wubby, the Windows Ubuntu installer, which allows you to run Ubuntu as essentially a user process under Windows without having to change a separate partition and stuff. That'll be really cool. And really the one I'm looking forward to, I'm not looking forward to the other ones, but Jono Bacon, the Ubuntu community manager, comes up in a couple weeks. He's a really energetic guy, great on stage, saw him Employment Scale. He graciously agreed to come on the show to talk about community development. So this will be one of those broad stroke, generic shows talking really about how do you get the community involved in your project? You know, how do we bring people into an open source project? How do we support them and stuff? He's going to be a real good guy to talk about that. We have Core Boot coming up after that. That's the replacement for the booting stuff on a Windows machine, not EFI, but an open source version of all that. We also have Cinelera, the video editing system, the open source video editing system. And I believe just added the OpenMoku guys. So talking about the GNU phone, essentially, all the software that runs for that. So those are all the guys on the short list. Coming up after that, we've got a bunch of other guys. Well, go see the webpage. If you go to twit.tv/floss, there will be linked from there a spreadsheet that has all the upcoming guests and some people that we're having on the short list and some projects that I still need help finding the people for. But hey, I've already got 150 names, so unless we do this show daily, I think we're probably good for a year or two.
I'm excited. I'm really excited. I look forward to that. It's going to be fun.
Absolutely.
Well, we thank you, Randall Schwartz. We thank the folks at Google and encourage you to get involved in the Summer of Code. If you're a student, this is a great opportunity. So many of the projects we talk about on the show started in the Summer of Code, and we are so glad to have Google. I was thinking about this. I don't think Google has ever bought ads before. I can't think of any place they might have.
Nothing comes to mind, so it might be a first. Might have cracked the egg.
Might be a first,
yep.
Which is awfully cool. Remember
Thanks
to go to
them.
Thank
sure.
you very much, Google. code.google.com/SOC and give us credit. Say Floss Weekly on your application if you heard about it. Thank you, Randall Schwartz. We will see you next time on Floss Weekly.